Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever seen that?
Oh, no.
That meme? That's Tinkerbell getting fucked by a cockroach?
No.
No. I have to show it to
I'm
you.
I'm scared. I'm really scared. Oh, my God. It's so much more emotive than I thought it was going to be.
It's very romantic.
It's very, yeah, this is giving, like, Julia Roberts in Closer. Well,
let's talk about Julia Roberts.
Let's talk about Julia Roberts. No transition needed.
Yeah, because this is Like a Virgin, and we are going to give yesterday's pop culture today's takes. I'm Rose Domu.
And I'm Fran Tirado.
Anyone who has listened to this podcast knows that Julia Roberts is very important to me personally.
And I as well.
She is Mother. She also once starred in a film called Mother's Day wearing a truly horrible orange wig.
And when she's not mother, she is sister. And when she's not sister, she is auntie.
Oh, yeah. I have watched her sometimes and said she was so aunt for that.
Yeah, she was.
she really was so second cousin for that.
Yeah, she's in Mother's Day, and she's also in Stepmother, which I did watch
Step
on a plane.
Mom.
Stepmom. Stepmom. Thank you. Yes, I did watch that on a plane recently. Very good.
I think I'm trying to think back and figure out what my first encounter with Julia Roberts was. And I'm pretty sure it was my best friend's wedding.
Wow.
Which makes a lot of sense because my best friend's wedding is my favorite Julia Roberts film. It's my favorite romantic comedy. It is one of my favorite movies. I would say, like, top 10.
Wow. Okay. I honestly only seen it once, so I kind of want to, maybe we'll pin that, and I want to know more about my best friend's wedding. I will say, true to, like, the way I grew up, my first Julia Roberts movie was Hook, where she plays Tinkerbell.
Oh, wait, maybe Hook was mine, too.
Really? Okay.
I just don't think of Hook as a Julia Roberts
it's
movie
not
because
really.
The role is so small.
And yet...
Literally, she's
and
Tinkerbell.
And yet, she adds something to Tink that no one else could. Like, there's a Julianess that, like, is just so specific.
Well, she's very sexy in it.
She's... Well, okay. So here's the... I mean, this
it's
is
a very sexualized Tinkerbell.
Okay, so I would actually wager this is, like, very theoretical just about Julia roles in general. I would actually say that a Julia role, whether it's Tinkerbell, My Best Friend's Wedding, Erin Brockovich, whatever, is a little less sexy and a little more gorgeous. Like, she has an innocent not innocent. She has a beauty that is, quote unquote, family friendly, or like she has a beauty that I think fits into so many different narratives. And she's able to
give. It's very accessible.
Yes, she's able to give sex appeal in a way that, you know, men watching will be like, oh my gosh, she's so hot. And then people, you know, people that aren't.
Are guys jerking off to Julia Roberts?
Well, I think that's my point. It's like she doesn't give sex, I think. I think she gives romance. She's immediately romantic with everything. Right. And it's like you wouldn't think of Tinkerbell as a role that would be romantic. And of course, the way they wrote it and also who they put in it, it's like she's going to bring the love element, like the gorgeous love infatuation. Like, yeah, I don't know. But okay, Hook, My Best Friend's Wedding. What did you latch onto when you first watched either of those with Julia?
Well, I do remember thinking, well, I think this is a weird thing about Hook in general, is that I, like the scene where Robin Williams, walks the plank and the mermaids rescue him and breathe into his mouth.
That's sexy.
I found that very erotic as a child.
So erotic.
And for some reason, that's also tied into Julia Roberts when Tinkerbell becomes big and kisses Peter Pan. I also found that weirdly hot as a child.
As
I don't
know
why.
As a child, it was wish fulfillment because, like, I for sure maybe, like, Peter Pan I loved growing. I mean, it's so, it's like, you know, obviously problematic. But, like, as a kid, I loved the cartoon Peter Pan. And, like, I as a kid who was kind of love crazy, like the idea of romancing Tinkerbell, like, that was, like, wish fulfillment, I think, even as a kid. So maybe we can go into My Best Friend's Wedding. Maybe you can induct me into this movie.
So, okay, let me give a sort of a brief synopsis of My Best Friend's Wedding. So My Best Friend's Wedding is a 1997 romantic comedy film. It's about Julia Roberts plays a food critic who...
I forgot that.
She... It's very important to the plot. Not really. It's very important to her character. So she plays a food critic who has this old friend from college, and they made a pact that if they reach some arbitrary age, which now in my mid-30s, looking back on it, is like so young. It's like 29 or 30 years old. If they got that old and never got married, they would marry each other. Mm. And so Julia Roberts, when she gets this call from her old friend, is like, oh, he's like remembering the bet and like there's still something between us. But actually what he has to tell her is that he is getting married to a like 22-year-old who is played by Cameron Diaz. Mm-hmm. One of her best roles, in my opinion.
I think so too.
Julia Roberts decides that that's her man and she's going to go break up their wedding. And she, spoiler alert, kind of does and then kind of doesn't. They do still get married. But I think this is a radical rom-com, especially for the time, in several ways. Julia Roberts' character is very obviously the villain of this story. She is a bad person. She does bad things all throughout the movie. She tries to get Dermot Mulroney fired from his job so that... or she tries to, like, come between... So Cameron Diaz's parents' dad is, like, really rich and has offered the Dermot Mulroney a job. And, like, Julia Roberts tries to, like, just get between them. And she is the villain. She goes into this with the purpose of breaking up their marriage. And, like, yes, she is the protagonist of the film, but she's not a good person. And I think this movie makes that very clear. And... she doesn't get the traditional rom-com happy ending that we are familiar with, because I think in a softer movie, the romantic lead would break up with his girlfriend, who would be like a shrew or like some kind of horrible person.
Right. But Cameron is genuinely like, you root for her. You want her to.
Oh, yeah. She is like... She is so magnetic and so funny and so vulnerable and beautiful. And you understand why this guy has fallen in love with her. And you also understand why him and Julia would never work out.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Julia is kind of a perfect anti-hero. Like, Julia coming in saying, like, it's me, hi, I'm the problem. But, like, also, like, and when we're talking about, like, the Julia cinematic universe and the roles she adopts, like, she injects this kind of permeable likability. And I obviously hate that term. But, like, in this era of rom-coms, right, like, film execs, like, are like, women need to be likable. Like, we need likable characters, likable, blah, blah, blah. And, like, using the word, like, likability as critique for, like, a character is so, like, it actually has... It just, like, doesn't make sense as a critique and usually is, like, thinly veiled misogyny or, like, whatever. But Julia does embody this, like, quintessential likability so that even when she's doing the most deplorable things, you can't help but, like, love her character.
Yes, well, what I think she has is, and this I really think is the thesis of this episode, is that Julia Roberts is... one of our last movie stars.
Absolutely.
And that is what she has. It's not just likability. She has star quality.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts is from an era of movie stars that does not exist anymore.
Yeah.
We don't have them.
Next to Angelina Jolie and, you know, all those classic A-listers.
And there is a reason, not to get too ahead of ourselves, why her movie Ticket to Paradise with George Clooney, which, whatever you want to say about it, was a huge box office success,
yeah,
purely because of the star
of
quality of the leads. What Julia Roberts has, going back to our Drag Race conversation from earlier, is charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent.
Actually say that,
yeah. She is the star package, and that's why something like My Best Friend's Wedding, where I think if she had been played by a different actress who didn't have that real-world connotation of being a movie star, of being America's sweetheart, people would have been against her and would have seen the way the movie ends as her, like, getting her comeuppance, rather than the ending actually being incredibly sweet and pretty radical for the time, because the way the movie ends is that, you know, this man that she's been trying to get marries this woman, and she is left alone at the reception, and her gay best friend comes and dances with her. And it's, like, this very beautiful, like, instance of, you know, like, a chosen family moment in a straight-ass 90s rom-com.
Yeah, and her as a movie star, it's like, so what you're basically saying is, like, if the kind of Hollywood actress pipeline was Drag Race, this current generation of stars, like the Emma Roberts, so to speak, are giving Marsha...
I don't know that Emma Roberts is a good one-to-one.
No, I'm saying Emma Roberts is giving Marsha, 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 and Julia's giving Mistress. Julia's giving Mistress, okay?
I would not put it in those terms.
I'm being fun. Cool. Anyways, I tend to agree with you. I think there's a je ne sais quoi about, like, what Julia and people like Julia can do that just, like, can't be done as much anymore.
Well, because you think about a lot of her early roles, and, like, even though she became known as a rom-com queen, her early roles were very sort of non-traditional and were the things that maybe would lead to an actress usually getting pigeonholed. Mm-hmm. Because, like, her first movie, if you look at her filmography...
Yeah, what is it?
Her first, well, I mean, not her first movie, but, like,
her big break,
one of her big break performances was Pretty Woman, in which she played a hooker.
Yeah, and I think in that same vein, like, the women that Julia tends to play are women that are, even though she's drop-dead gorgeous, like, that must be said, women who are off the beaten path, women who are emotionally complex, women who will not be 100% beholden to their, you know, romantic, you know, co-lead or whatever. Like, she has this autonomy, this gumption, I think, and this kind of, like, you know, laughy, sexy resilience. Well, I mean, not even sexy, as I said
before. Well, the laugh is iconic. The smile is iconic. You know what I think the thing with Julia is that something that she does, which I think we don't like in other actors, which is that she cannot disappear into a role. You always know.
That's so true.
You always know that you are watching Julia Roberts, but with other actors, that would be a negative. With her, it's additive.
Yeah.
Because you are so aware of who she is, and she is such a magnanimous, like, vivacious, vibrant presence IRL,
yeah,
that she brings that to every role she plays, and she, like, fills it up. So even though she's not doing some, like, fucking method work where she's disappearing into a role and, like, making herself look ugly, you wouldn't want her to do that.
No.
Because that ineffable Julia Roberts thing that she brings is why we love her.
Right.
And why we want to watch it over and over again, her playing different versions of the same woman, which is just herself. That's what makes her a star.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to talk about the Oceans franchise, but it is why in Oceans, I think, 12 or whatever, it's so genius that Julia Roberts ends up... Did you see Oceans 12?
There's this
scene where she plays, you know, just a woman. She plays, you know, just a character in this franchise. And there's a scene where she pretends to be Julia Roberts.
Right.
And that...
I do vaguely remember that.
And the fact that she can't disappear into a role makes that element of the plot so doubly, triply funny. Like,
it's like meta commentary.
Yes, it's so... I thought it was so good, but I also haven't watched Oceans in a really long time, so I don't know how I would think about it now.
Well,
but
it's also why she was kind of the only person who could play her role in Notting Hill.
Yeah. I've never seen...
Okay, so I rewatched Notting Hill recently for the first time since when I originally saw it, which was like when it first came out. And it's not a good movie.
You used to love it, right?
No, I did not.
Oh, I thought you had told me to watch it before. And so,
I really love Richard Curtis, who is the writer-director behind Four Weddings and a Funeral and, like, a lot of Hugh Grant's films. Notting Hill, I don't think is a very good movie, having rewatched it recently. But Notting Hill is about this bumbling English guy played by Hugh Grant, also doing this, like, Hugh Grant is the male Julia Roberts. Mm-hmm. You know, he plays a version of himself in all these movies.
Okay, continue.
So he is this, like, bumbling English guy who owns a travel bookstore, which is a thing that used to exist when you could not only own a physical bookstore, but one that only sold one particular type of books, and it wasn't, like, YA fantasy romance. And one day, an erstwhile movie star, played by Julia Roberts, stumbles into the bookstore. They stumble into each other. He pours coffee over her, takes her back to his apartment, and they fuck, like, immediately, and then have this little love affair. And the only reason that movie works is because it's Julia Roberts, and you're like, oh, I believe that this is the biggest movie star in the world, because she's being played by the biggest movie star in the world.
Well, Julia can push emotional stakes in any movie, right? I maybe haven't watched enough Hugh Grant movies. I really feel like George Clooney is, like, the male Julia Roberts, because I think Hugh Grant gives a little more, like, kind of, like, mumblecore, kind of Emma Thompson, kind of, like, I don't know.
It's not, because George Clooney was a TV star on ER.
Oh, that's true.
Who then, really, the biggest movies he ever made were the Oceans movies, and those were, like, his big crossover moment. Hugh Grant was the king of rom-coms, and he played the same version of every character in all these rom-coms, and he ruled the 90s in the same way that Julia Roberts did, and that's why, in a lot of ways, them coming together in Notting Hill was the perfect marriage of the thing he did, which was star in all of these British romantic comedies that were, like, very smart, very quick, like, a little sad. And then the thing that she did, which was be the big Hollywood megastar, you know, like, with the iconic head of hair and smile and laugh. And it was, like, on paper, the perfect marriage of those things, and the movie does work because of them. It's just not a very good movie and not a very good performance of hers. Mm-hmm. I think also because she's not playing exactly the kind of actress she was. She's playing, like, a serious actress rather than Julia Roberts.
It's, like, not as maybe complex, or maybe it's just not as Julia or something.
There's also a scene where she goes to dinner with him and his friends, and they're sitting around a table all talking about why they deserve the last brownie, and the way that they win the game is, like, they say how awful their life is, and like, they all tell their, like, sob stories. Hugh Grant's sister, who uses a wheelchair, like, says something about how she, like, can't have a baby or something. And then it comes around to Julia Roberts. She's like, well, I got all you gagged because I'm famous and, like, my ex-boyfriends sell our stories to the tabloids, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, no, babe, you actually still have a pretty nice life. And it is kind of funny because they're all like, are like, okay, whatever. It's not that bad.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, it's like when you think about like Julia roles in those like this era of rom-coms, forgive me, I don't actually know all of the chronology, but like it's kind of like Erin Brockovich, like to me, stands out in a sea of Julia roles because it is romantic. It is part rom-com, but it's a legal drama wherein she is the beating heart and like primary character, you know, like she that Erin Brockovich is probably top 10 for me.
Like, I've only seen it once. What I will say from what I remember is that I actually think that Julia's character, well, I mean, obviously Erin Brockovich was a real person, but the way Julia plays her is very similar to Vivian, the character she played in Pretty Woman, which is this sort of, you know, like down on her luck,
Can't get anything right, can't get any luck. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, woman who, like, is used to being seen only as a sexual object, obviously, and, like, it's in a much more, like, obvious way in Pretty Woman because she's playing a sex worker. But it is something that she, like, as her career progressed, didn't do a lot, which was play, like, one of the people.
Yeah, and in the kind of, I guess, sexiness of Julia Roberts that we're talking about, in something like Erin Brockovich or Pretty Woman, her sexiness is, like, I hate using this word because it sounds so loaded, but it's, like, non-threatening. Does that even make sense?
No, I get what you mean, because even in... So the
because, like, she's not sexy in that blonde bob, you know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, because there's the scene in Pretty Woman, and listen, Pretty Woman is
a perfect movie.
I love Pretty Woman so much. The first time I ever went out in women's clothing, I won't say, like, drag, because, like, that's not what it was.
No.
The first time it was for Halloween, my freshman year of college, I was Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman.
And that nasty bob.
In the blonde wig.
Nasty shake and go.
And, like, that's because to me, that was, like...
She was giving the TikTok
that
girls
was, like,
in season
the
15.
Pinnacle of, feminine beauty to me was that look, even though she looks so much better when she takes the wig off. But that scene where she goes to the hotel with Richard Gere and... She, like, gives him a blowjob while she's wearing that wig. It's like, she's not sexy, and I actually think...
Wait, does she give him a blowy in that wig?
Yeah, she, like, literally puts a pillow down on the floor and, like, sits at his knees.
I forgot about that.
And, like, I think that's the point of the movie is she's not sexy. They're trying to communicate as much as possible that this is someone who shouldn't be a sex worker because, like, I mean, it's obviously problematic because she's, like, quote-unquote better than that.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a lot of, like...
It was the 90s.
It was literally 1990, so it was made in the 80s. But it's pretty transgressive for a romantic comedy of that time to have the leading lady be... Excuse me. To have the leading lady be a sex worker. Mm. But then the one scene that I do think is actually sexy in that movie is when she... Richard Gere has gone down to the... bar in the hotel to play the piano, and Julia Roberts comes down in a bathrobe, and the Richard Gere asks all the guys who work at the hotel to leave the room, and he lifts her up onto the piano and, like, opens the robe and, like, puts his head in her stomach and, like, presses her down onto the piano.
Sex scenes
are so hot.
So that's such a good scene.
It's so erotic.
It's erotic, yeah. And God, I can't believe you've only seen Erin Brockovich once. I honestly feel like we could do a whole episode on Erin, but...
I know, we would have to bring Hunter Harris
back. I was just about to say, like, I wish we could, you know, pull out our Hunter Harris phone, like, a la, like, Powerpuff Girls, like... Boop, boop,
yeah,
boop,
Hunter,
like,
get here right now.
Get here right now, because Hunter is, you know, a noted scholar of Erin Brockovichology. But that movie is, I think, encapsulates... Everything that, you know, Julia does best in a movie, which is, like, have this insurmountable gumption and create this engine with her face alone through the
and
sixth
her,
film.
And her hair.
Yes, and her hair. Oh, of course.
The story of Julia Roberts is the story of hair.
and
her boobs, as Phoebe just chimed in to say.
Yeah. But yeah, God, that movie, Rose, we have to rewatch because it is a stunning film. Amazingly written, great legal drama. Have you ever in your own life had an Erin Brockovich moment where you were fighting some sort of bizarre legal drama? Any sort of, like... Did you ever, like, get into housing law, you know, were you ever squatting? Did you ever have to, in your name change or something like that? I was thinking about changing my name this year, but I don't want to do any.
No, changing my name was actually, like, a very smooth process for
me. Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really easy. It does involve a lot of bureaucracy, but, like, it's, actually, the closest I came was when I went to get my name changed. So there is a requirement that you are supposed to publish your name change in a newspaper. And actually, like, this is some tea. All the dolls in New York do it in the Irish Times because it's, like, the cheapest way you can do it. So it's just funny for me to think that there's this, like, small Irish newspaper that literally only exists so trans people can publish their like, name changes. And it's just, like, full of dead names.
Oh, my God.
But so when horrific. When I went to city court to do this, what I said to the judge was I asked to have that requirement waived because at the time I was still a journalist. And what I said was, look, you know, like, my name is out online and is connected with my dead name. So, like, there kind of already exists this public record. And also, if something were to be published, it might have, like, harmful consequences for me just because I am, like, on a very minor scale, like, a public figure or whatever.
And did they?
And the judge did waive the requirement.
That's
so I didn't have to get it published. So I did kind of have an Erin Brockovich moment.
I love. I was mulling, actually, on my own question. And I can't, I'll be extremely vague because you know the tea, but I can't actually, like, fully talk about it. I somewhat recently got a service done. And this, I very recently went to go do something who was highly recommended, get a service done by from someone who came recommended by a lot of my friends. And this service was botched, for lack of a better word. And it was very, very difficult to go through because I actually, you know, I don't believe in our legal system and I hate bureaucracy. And I also think that, like, suing people is, like, white people behavior. And so I just had to, like, go to this girl and be like, hey, what happened is not okay. And these are all the ramifications that it now has on my life months out from this experience. And I don't believe in suing people, but I do believe in justice. And I need X, Y, and Z paid for. And I got $5,000.
You did?
I got $5,000, baby.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
Yes, I did. I got $5,000. And I, let me tell you, I had to send some email-length texts in order to get it. But I got it. And I'm very proud of it.
Through Venmo?
No, through Zelle. And so there was a written agreement. You know, there was some kind of, you know, there was some kind of Erin Brockovichian elements.
Wow.
I felt very proud of myself, though. And
you
I
should.
Also And I also did it in a way that was not cruel, right? Like, I said to this person, I was like, hey, like, I don't wish ill on you. I'm not trying to, like, malign your business. Like, I, you know, just want, like, to be well, and I want my stuff taken care of. So this is what it's going to cost. Here is, and I literally sent the invoice of all of the things that I needed to pay for in order to fix what had happened. Yeah.
Wow, good for you.
Thank you.
The only difference between our stories and Erin Brockovich is that she was doing this to help other people, and we were doing it to help ourselves.
Yes, but that was the beauty. It's such a very satisfying ending. I won't spoil it if you've never seen Erin Brockovich, but if you have never seen Erin Brockovich,
it's a very old movie. You can spoil it.
No, well, you can probably guess that she wins in the end. But, like, come on, that movie is perfect. We have to rewatch Rose.
It's and
so
it also
good.
Is tied to the Real Housewives franchise because Erica Girardi's husband is the Erin Brockovich lawyer.
Yes. Oh my fucking God, I always forget that.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
Is he breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Movies that are not very good. I rewatched Eat, Pray, Love recently.
Girl.
Have you? When was the last time you watched that movie?
I watched it once, like, very long after it
in
came
theaters?
Out.
Oh,
no.
Okay. I watched it in theaters.
I did not see it in theaters. I was not part of the Eat, Pray, Love craze.
I was.
The only thing I remember about it is that the food looked very good.
I was basic mama. So I read the book when it came out. Like, I studied Italian diva. Like, I went to Italy and I sat in the exact booth that Julia Roberts sits in the best pizza place in Naples. Like, and I took a picture of me laughing like Julia Roberts. Oh, I shit you not, it's probably still on my Facebook. I loved the Eat, Pray, Love-a-zance. The movie, you know, was like Ryan Murphy, but like, I forgot that Viola Davis is in that movie.
Yeah.
I totally forgot. What the fuck? And this
is
also...
You know what that movie gave us is Dog Days Are Over by Florence and the Machine was used in the trailer. And that is kind of the reason why Florence blew up in the way she did.
What?
Yeah.
Really? Wow. I actually didn't know that. And this was also 2010, which was the year of James Franco. And James Franco was in that movie, and God, that movie just was not very good. But I do, that said, I do want to watch, I do want Ryan Murphy to direct more films.
Ryan Murphy doesn't need to be doing anything else, anything more than what he's already doing.
No, I think he should do films instead of TV, because I think that a contained story is his strong suit. I think, like, you know, series, like, they always get away from him, because he's usually not even, like, working across them. Have you ever, Eat, Pray, Loved? What was your Bali? Was it Berlin?
Have I ever Eat, Pray, Loved?
Slash, what that really just means is, like, have you ever...
Yeah, like, I mean...
Like, flown internationally with a kind of vague, existential slash romantic-driven, like, life pivot?
Yeah. I guess I would say that, you know, like, the first summer I spent in Berlin was...
I knew it!
But it was more of a... It was a snort dance fuck. That was my version of Eat, Pray, Love.
Yeah. Mine, okay, I studied abroad in London, and I'm very sorry for that sentence. And that was probably my Eat, Pray, Love. But mine was not, wait, what did you say?
Snort dance fuck.
Yeah, mine was not snort dance fuck. It was more like eat social anxiety. Like
but you but you went for an academic purpose, so I don't actually think that fulfills the requirement. Because an eat, pray, love is like you're abandoning your life to do something that is purely for pleasure.
So let me embellish. I did abandon my life. I was at a university at Indiana that I hated. I had chased my boyfriend there, and I, you know, hated studying there. I wanted to get out as soon as humanly possible and not spend any more time in Indiana. I was sick of most of my friends. I was sick of the curriculum. And I was like, I had to unenroll from my like university in order to take this like research class at University College London that wasn't even like, you know, endorsed by like my school. And so I really did go out of my way to like have like a kind of find myself moment. And this was also very important, probably for you as well, pre-iPhone. So there's a way more, like, I mean, this is probably, I mean, I don't know if this was for you because of the drugs, but, like, there's so much more stuff going on inside of you when you don't have an iPhone. Like, there's so much more inner, you have so much more of an inner life. You're thinking so much more about yourself and your interiority.
I mean, when I was doing the most drugs, I still had an iPhone.
Oh, okay. So, but to that effect, when I did study abroad in London, I was traveling every single weekend by myself. So I went to Italy by myself. I went to France by myself. I went to all these different countries, book festivals, a Robin concert, like all this different stuff, searching 100% on my own for like the meaning of life. You know, like I was looking, I wasn't even looking for love. I was looking for meaning out of my life, which is like, even though this Eat, Pray, Love is not very good, it is why Eat, Pray, Love was like such a mega thing, is because it was able to tap into this like white womanhood that I unfortunately was very adjacent to, wherein it's like all these, there's a whole class.
Was this back when you had silver hair?
Yes, of course. No. Actually, this was pre-silver hair, but I had self-dyed a strip of my bangs with bleach, and so, and I have black hair, so it was like straw yellow.
Okay, I
yeah.
See.
So, but that I did have a straw yellow strip in a very long Rihanna-esque bang because it was inspired by Rihanna and her hair at the time. But yeah, that was my Eat, Pray, Love.
Okay,
my
so if you were gonna do an Eat, Pray, Love now, what would it be? Where would you go?
Ooh, very good question. My instinct is maybe to say Mexico. I would love to do a Mexico tour because I haven't properly explored a lot of different cities throughout Mexico that all of my friends say are like cultural hotspots and nightlife hotspots that I'm like always, you know, been adjacent to, have like followed artists and creators on Instagram that, you know, make stuff there. I feel like I have another one that maybe will come to me. What would you say?
Well, so I actually was thinking of going to Italy. I like was literally looking into booking a trip to Italy next month.
Wow.
Because I need to get off this continent.
International.
I have not traveled internationally since pre-COVID. And I've never been to Italy. I've spent a lot of time in Europe and have almost gone to Italy a couple times, but always said I didn't want to go just for a couple days. I really wanted to do like a big Italy trip. But I actually think my Eat, Pray, Love is also a Mamma Mia moment. I need to go to Greece.
Oh, Greece would be really good. Oh, I could see that for you.
Like, I just want to go and forget all my responsibilities. And I just want to, like, go travel and eat and fuck and see ruins and art and, like, go swimming in the Aegean Sea and, like, you know, whatever.
You know, I've never been to Berlin. Maybe Berlin is my Eat, Pray, Love.
Yeah, but okay, this is
would the thing. Would I die?
This
will
is,
I die?
This is the thing is why I don't think that can be an Eat, Pray, Love for you is because you will still find a way to turn that into an approximation of your life here.
Yeah.
You will still
I'll find friends.
You will find friends. You will network.
Yeah.
You will check your email. You will hustle.
I'll be there in probably the same week that a bunch of drag friends are there.
Yeah. I think for you to do a true Eat, Pray, Love, you need to go somewhere where you don't know anyone and just figure it out.
Yeah, I agree. And you should throw your iPhone into the ocean.
I'm not going to do that because then how would I go on TikTok and find, you know, like the best place to go for dinner or whatever?
Okay, so zooming out of this Julia convo, like, what is what is Julia now? Like, I feel like she's among these celebrities that are in press junkets being like, there are no more stars anymore. Like when Jennifer Aniston said in that Allure interview, she's like,
well,
that's so sad.
There aren't.
It's true.
There, but, and like I said before, that's the reason why Ticket to Paradise, which we both saw, wasn't very good, but still was a huge commercial hit because those are the last movie stars.
Right.
Like, can you name one, like, a new-ish celebrity who is a movie star? No, you can't.
Well, I just don't think, I mean, I think there are tons of new celebrities that are, yes,
but
bona fide.
But a celebrity is different than a movie star.
I do think that there are people that come into this generation of movies, and yeah, I would absolutely say they are movie stars, but they're not going to be movie stars like Julie Roberts ever again. And I think that that's part of, like, I think it's like, I personally, like, mourn this era of movie stars, but also know that, like, pop culture writ large, especially in movies, is always shifting into something that kind of, it can reference the past, but it's never going to go backwards. And so what I'm kind of thinking about, and maybe you can, like, noodle on it with me, is, like, if we can never get Julia Roberts again, because we can't, like, what, who are the new people that inhabit the same spaces as Julia that make us feel the way Julia makes us feel on screen? Like, I'm trying to think of, like...
Well, it's also about a business thing, because the thing about a movie star is that, like, why they exist and why they don't exist anymore is a movie star is someone who can sell a movie purely by being in it. That's why Ticket to Paradise was such a huge success. Not because it had, like, an interesting premise or a good trailer or anything. It was... Julia Roberts was in it. George Clooney was in it.
Period.
So people were buying tickets. That's it. So that's why I think, like, the closest thing we have to a movie star now who's, like, currently making movies would be someone like The Rock. I don't know.
The Rock. Interesting. That's
not
a good
even,
one.
Like, if you think about, like, what are the biggest movies now? Marvel movies.
Yeah.
None of the people in them are movie stars.
No.
You are not, like, what movies outside of Thor is Chris Hemsworth making or Paul Rudd? They are not selling movies on their name alone. They are part of a machine where actually them as people are secondary to the characters they're playing. Like, I would argue that the famous person is not Chris Hemsworth, it's Thor. And he is part of a machine.
Mm.
Even someone like Chris Evans, who, like, yes, has done things like Knives Out, like, he is famous because of his proximity to the franchises he stars in.
I think The Rock and, like, this, like, Marvel Universe thing is, like, totally accurate. I also think that maybe in a different version of this idea, I think part of the stars that could maybe do something that Julia does are the ones that are, like, as not online as possible. And I think that, honestly, you know, this is stupid, but, like, Timothée Chalamet or like Florence Pugh or, like, I mean, now that she's had the Don't Worry Darling junket, it's like the mysticism is gone now, but, like, Florence Pugh could have been that girl, you know? Like, there are people that are classically, like, they're, maybe what I'm trying to say, because I don't really know if what I'm saying is accurate, but it's like there's a kind of attention to acting in everything they do and a focus on the acting that, you know, protects them because they're not on social that much. And so we're able to bring our opinion of how much we love this celebrity, like a Timothy. It's like, I'm going to go see a Timothy movie no matter what. That's not necessarily true, but there are a lot of people where that is true for them. That's kind of maybe it. I don't know.
Yeah, I do think someone like Timothy is the closest thing we have to a contemporary movie star. But I do think you're right in that social media keeps us from being able to abstract the person from the persona. Or maybe there is a lack of, I mean, it's funny because we were talking about this in our episode with Hari Neff. There is a lack of mystery around these celebrities, and I think that's why we don't have the movie star of it all, because Julia in her heyday felt larger than life in a way that celebrities simply aren't now. But even though Julia was a huge tabloid figure, but she only existed to us either in the films we were seeing,
or in the tabloids,
on the red carpets, on the cover of magazines, or in the tabloids where we were getting the most sensationalized parts of her personal life, like Aloe Vera, which I think I've told you about on the podcast before. Okay, so this is, I mean, like, very juicy celebrity tabloid gossip. So Julia Roberts fell in love with this guy who was married. I think he was maybe, like, a director, like, worked on a film or something that she worked on. And he was married to this woman named Vera. And Vera would not divorce him. And so Julia Roberts went out in public wearing a T-shirt that she had made herself, on which she wrote Aloe Vera, but it was like she was saying Aloe Vera, like like Vera was a low person, or
God.
It was just like, it was like stupid, but it was also just like, oh my God. Like, Julia Roberts is kind of a mean person.
Oh, yeah.
There actually are several stories about her having, like, run-ins with the paparazzi,
right,
where she has told them off and, like,
which we won't entertain.
I mean, that's not being mean. Like, I'm sure
protecting yourself.
I'm sure, like, being Julia Roberts comes with so much, and the way she's hounded by the press and has been for almost her entire adult life, like, we'll never be able to understand that. But what I'm saying is that Julia Roberts is not someone who ever gave unfiltered access to her life in the way that celebrities kind of have to do now. And so because of that, I think that turned her into a bigger and more mysterious and more magnetic figure that was, like, so separate from us in a way that celebrities now, like, think they need to be super connected to their fans, and maybe they do. But, you know, Timothée Chalamet, who is, I do think you're right, like, the closest thing we have currently to...
And also Zendaya, honestly.
And Zendaya, but, like, they still are... They have social media,
yeah, they're
and...
They're maybe not very online, but... Because they're definitely... I think Zendaya's elusive, Timothée's elusive, but they're definitely online.
They're definitely online. I mean, and their social media, like, truly only exists as a way to promote their projects.
Yep.
But there's still something where, like, you can reply to one of Timothy's Instagram stories. He's never going to see it.
No.
But you can still do it. And,
yep,
like,
you can engage.
Julia Roberts...
Would never.
You could never.
You can't engage
you,
with her.
You can't engage with her.
It would ruin
it. That is it. It's you... I mean, it's not even that it would ruin it. It's like, you... It's not possible.
Yeah.
It's not... It never has been. It never will be. You will... The closest you could ever come to Julia Roberts is, like, if you went to the premiere of one of her movies and stood on the side of a barricade and watched her
and
walk
screamed
by.
Screamed at her.
And screamed at her. That's
Mother!
The closest. That's the closest you would ever get.
Yeah.
Timothée Chalamet, I've hugged him twice. Okay?
Say that. You always say that.
I do. Because I have.
And I will.
And I will.
Continue.
I will get a third hug in.
I will get a third
and
hug.
And when it happens, I'll whisper in his ear, this is the third time we've hugged. Slide into our DMs and tell us what your favorite Julia Roberts role movie is. Who's your favorite movie star? Do you think there are contemporary movie stars? We want to hear your opinions. Let us know at Like a Virgin 42069. Please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. My name's Rose Domu. You can find me anywhere online at Rose Domu.
And my name is Fran. You can find me at Fran Squishko anywhere you like.
Like a Virgin is an iHeartRadio production. Our producers, Phoebe Unter, with support from Lindsay Hoffman and Nikki Etor. Until next week, au revoir, virgins.
Me.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.